Welcome to the What I've Learnt podcast. I'm thrilled to have the wonderful, talented actor and singer-songwriter Elise Platt. Elise is a star of Australian stage and screen and has graced our televisions for almost 30 years, from early roles in Sons and Daughters to working with Tony Barber on Sale of the Century, and now reprising her role as Olivia Bell in Neighbours. Elise is always being creative. Well, Elise, a lot has changed since January, when you were appearing as your musical incarnation, Baker's Daughter, in the Fringe World Festival in Perth. How our world has changed. How have you been coping, and how have you been creating?
Wow, you just gave me goosebumps when you did that, Deb, in terms of January 2020.
Yeah.
Whoever would have thought that we would all be here? I mean, no one. I can remember reading about COVID first appearing in my orbit. I was in Turks and Caicos, actually. So, you know, having a wonderful New Year's Eve celebration and just thinking, oh, the year ahead, and coming home to going to the festivals, as you mentioned. So it's just been incredible spin out, like really. But I have to say, you know, it's for me, it's had a lot of challenges. I've had to move out of my home. Where we live, because both of us being artists, we were unable to maintain, you know, all our financial costs. Commitments, so costs and everything. So fortunately, I'm able to rent my house, which is great. So it's not such a bad thing.
You mean rented out, as in to?
I've rented it to tenants.
Good.
Because otherwise, you know, because there's just no work. Absolutely no work at all. So that just, you know, for many people in the arts has stopped. So that's challenging and interesting. And, you know, the trauma of packing a house and then packing the house that my mother lived in with me, who passed away nearly a year ago, is just another layer of impact.
Trauma,
Trauma and, so it's been a wild ride, So I'm happy to say that after finding tenants, which was very lucky in this climate to actually find suitable people, it did take a while, and now found a place to land, packed things as well. I haven't actually gone through mum's things because I can't. That's just too hard.
Understandably. But, you know,
So everything is now, that part's done, and I kind of literally just stopped, landed where we're staying, and, you know, have taken some time to take a breath, and you know, after the buzzing of all of that energy of shift, it's like, wow, and now where am I, and what does this mean? And as the dust has settled, it's actually been really surprisingly calm, incredibly creative. I've really, really enjoyed the limits of not being able to go beyond 5Ks. I know that's not a popular thing to say, but it's actually really contained me and made me, we have to be, and I've, it's really been welcomed. I have to say it's been wonderful.
Well, a lot of the artists that I've interviewed have reflected on the fact that they have an interior space that they can access, and that, which is somewhat what you're reflecting on, where they've had to actually look inward, and fortunately they have those resources to create, which is what you say that you're also doing. And so what have you learned during that period about your ability to do that, and really your resources, what you can access in a time of crisis?
Well, do you know what I've learned, Deb, is I've actually learned, so when you're a performer, you know, the question is, well, if you just sing and you play an instrument or whatever, you know, and you love it, why do you need an audience? Why? What's that all about? And that's something that I've learned through this period, because I, unlike any other time in my life, am really, really connecting to that internal space of an artist and authenticity and who I am. And surprisingly, you know, my desire to sing and to perform is really about connection. Like I really, one, connecting to the truth of my own sensibility and soul and meaning. And two, why do I, because I'm moving on probably to your next question, but, you know, I've created this use of social media where I go into my bathroom or to a place that has the echo, and I've been journeying through this time, marking it with finding songs that are relevant to me or to everybody. I write something about it, and that's evolved into something else, which is about this connection with other people. And it really hit me last night when I was working I've got this other little part-time job that I'm doing at the moment that's got nothing to do with music, but it's still creative. And then I was really, I came home and I felt really down, and I thought, what's going on? And I thought, oh, I know, I've moved away from my internal room of what I love to do, which is, you know, find the song, record the song, write and give it to you, my audience, which at the moment is my social media platform.
Yes.
And it just was so meaningful to do that. And the way I posted it last night was I actually spoke about sadness and how, you know, it's okay to do that and to have that and to be that, because you're actually not sad alone. We're all sharing this sadness. And I think, in fact, it's actually a really healing, honoring, brave thing to actually acknowledge and allow in our space, because we live in a culture where we're all about spinning it on and got to be, you know, da 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 da, and, you know, maybe not. Maybe the two have to coexist, you know, happy, sad, sad, happy at the same time.
I think that's such a good point, and I think actually the universality of our experiences right now has allowed a lot of doors and windows to open where people have shared things that they may not have otherwise. There's an honesty, there's a bravery, similar to what you're referring to. And I'm noticing that even with all the interviews, people are much more prepared to share their vulnerability, because in a sense, we're all vulnerable in this context. We're all feeling that. Yes. And the artists are often the barometer of a community, yeah. I find. They're often a fabulous way of seeing what we're all dealing with, and those yes. universal themes. So I love for it. Can you talk to me a little bit about your bathtub series? Because I think that is an example of a beautiful, raw, brave, intimate thing that you do in your bathroom. I mean, I just think it's brilliant.
Thank you, Deb. Well, I first went there because I was at home when we first went into lockdown, you know, the first beginning of the first wave. So back in, I guess, what was it, March or April? Mm-hmm. And, you know, as well as packing boxes and trying to find a tenant for the house, I was there with my guitar, and then I had a auto harp there that I'd never played before, and I was starting to learn that. And then I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll start to learn a song a day. That's what I'll do. I'll learn a song a day. I'll keep myself busy, you know, keeping my brain going and, you know, do songs I've never done before, or I'll write a song a day. That was what I first thought. And then as I was starting to play my guitar and sing, I thought, oh, I'll just go, oh, I think I might go into the bathroom because it's just got such great reverb in there. And then I took my phone in, and I started to record myself, and I went, oh, maybe I can prop the phone up and maybe I could film myself. And that was the beginning of my bathtub studio. And I think I'm now up to studio session number 33 or something like that.
They're wonderful.
And what it did really, and what it's taught me, Deb, is that, yes, the reason for going there is because of the sound. The acoustic is wonderful. And then sharing it with you, the audience, is a really great way of connecting, and the songs that I've been learning are songs that are, funnily, it's pretty much from my childhood, from my 70s, from the, my 70s.
From the 70s, yeah.
My 70s, oh my God, I went in my 100. That's so funny. And so as I was journeying through this experience, and I first wrote about it, and I said, look, you know, I'm visiting songs of past, and, you know, cleansing, and the echoes of my mind, and, you know, I was sort of using all those metaphors and symbolisms of it. And it's just become so meaningful to me. Like, as, because when I, like, when I went into the space last night, I came home and I was feeling really kind of missing. I was missing something. And it was that touchstone. I thought, oh, I know. And often, if people follow me doing this, I'm in my pajamas or I'm in my dressing gown, or,
I love,
you know,
it.
The care factor isn't really about makeup. I hardly ever wear any makeup. It's just what inspires me to do it, and when it's right to do it, is when I feel this connection to my heart and my soul and the need to speak and say something. And then I find that I automatically find material that connects with what's happening with us universally, or what's happening to me personally, or do you know what I mean? And so
yeah, I do.
I sing from that place, and then I find it's effortless to then continue on with writing and saying, you know, what I did last night about loneliness and about sadness. And it's very rich experience, and I love more than anything connecting with people that way, like I've never done before as an artist.
Well, I think it shows your resourcefulness, your creativity, but also the bathroom's often a space that's private. It's where people often do go to cry or to, you know, it's actually a very intimate space. And then for those who haven't seen it, just to explain, you often sit in the bath with your guitar, which I love. You look so
cute. Without water.
Yeah, without water. And you sing these beautiful songs, and you know, with this beautiful, simple lighting, and you create this ambience. And I think it is really a very emblematic series, because it reflects so much about the interior space. And you, as you said, it sort of was born, it started when the pandemic began at the beginning of the year, but it's got a life of its own now. So congrats, because I think it's beautiful what you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to touch on, which is probably related, but, I, you know, I read this wonderful little post that you did about your dad, the sailor, and it was really beautiful. And, you know, you speak about your dad, the sailor, and your parents' story, which is quite romantic. And I'm just interested, because one of the things I've noticed is you're quite authentic in the way that you do share. You talk about very intimate memories, and that is one of them. Yeah. So what did you learn from your parents and from that story?
So Dad was from England, from the north of England, and Mum was from country town Victoria, Alexandra. What it taught me about the two of them is they had such aspirations for, you know, dreaming and romantic, and you know, that meeting, that coming together. Like, Dad met Mum on a tram. Yeah. He was in Port Melbourne. He was a chef, Dad. He was a cook back then, but became a chef. And Mum was, in fact, actually at the time engaged to somebody else. And so it was a big, big deal in the 50s to break off this engagement to a very nice man who remained really great friends with Mum. And, you know, the thought of back then, what that must have been like, those worlds, you know, meeting a mum, being in her little country town. Like, I think she was the only one out of six children that in that those days went off after they got married on a ship on her own, because Dad had to go back to sea. And there's just this love of of life that mum and dad had growing up that was just so magical and
romantic.
Really romantic and they taught, you know, and really, really big-hearted, kind, loving people. And that's what, you know, people always said, oh, what could you say about your brothers and your mum? And I just said, we're really kind people, you know, more than anything. That's
what matters in your family.
That's what matters, yeah. And also, you know, dare to imagine and dream. And like I can remember as a little girl about, I think I was 14, and mum and I had been to the airport to say, to wave off. Because remember back in the 70s or the 80s, it was really a big deal when you went overseas, especially coming from, you know, the suburbs in Ferntree Gully. It was like, oh, wow, they're coming in an airplane and how amazing. And dad used to do little bets on horses, but he'd only ever bet like 50 cents, but he'd do, I think they were called quinellas or quads or something like that. And so it was a really strategic way of doing this. Anyway, and so mum and I had been to the airport, waved goodbye to her girlfriends who were going on this adventure to Europe and to England, and mum and I were in the car driving back, and she said, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could go? And I went, oh, mum, I'd love to go. Wouldn't that be fabulous? And we went home and we were telling dad, you know, how exciting it was. Well, dad won all this money on the horses and he bought us tickets. So he bought mum a ticket and bought me a ticket. And I think it was like 4 weeks later, mum and I were at the airport boarding a KLM flight to the world, and off we went.
What a great story.
It was amazing, Jeff. It was so great. I got to meet my dad's family in England, and we stayed in all these wonderful hotels in Amsterdam and Paris and London, and it was just the best.
What a brilliant story. And, it, you know, really I think more than ever we feel like we have to live grabbing the moment, and thank God you did that with your parents. What a wonderful story.
Absolutely.
I mean, an opportunity. So just moving forward a little bit to what you're up to now, clearly you're continuing to create, but you're also reprising your role on Neighbours of Olivia Bell. Tell me a little bit about that, and how does that feel going back all the way to that role, and just how are you feeling about that?
I'm incredibly grateful and love it, and I love everybody at Neighbours. They are just the most wonderful, wonderful family of people, and the producers and everything. They're great. They're just fantastic. I actually did Olivia Bell. First of all, I was Jen Handley, and Jen was on Neighbours way back in the 90s, Jen. So it's not her. So I was there for about a year or 18 months with Jen, and then years later, I think back in 2013 or 12, I just had a tiny little role as Olivia Bell, who was a bit of a love interest for Dr. Carl. And that was just a very brief moment. And now she came back at the beginning of this year to sort of stir things up a little bit for the Kennedys. And she's a writer like yourself.
Oh, good. We love you.
So then there was room for Olivia to come back again. She's written a book and she's coming back to write another book, I think. So off, you know, there she will be back in Neighbours. I'm there for a couple of months, November, December, I start filming.
It's very exciting. And to also have work during this climate. And
I know.
You know, that's quite extraordinary. But also, is it something that you sort of have to put, does it come back easily? Is it something that you find, so do you have to really go, you know, it's sort of like going back to what you did 20 years ago and then learning it, is it? You know, like sitting down with the scripts.
It's really difficult. The hardest thing about it is actually my memory, learning the lines. Because when you're on a series like Neighbours or Sons and Daughters and you're a regular, well, your brain become, you exercise that muscle and it's easier. You know, you've got pages and pages and pages of dialogue. You've got a rhythm that your character speaks, and so it's much easier to slot in. But when you just breeze in and you're there for a month, or, you know, you're there just for a week, it is so hard because you land, you're in an environment that you haven't been in for a while. You've got cameras, you've got this, you've got da-da-da-da-da, and you've got a very, very short amount of time to deliver what you've got to say. Say it authentic, you know, like realistically.
In character, yeah.
In character, look good. And it's not easy. It's really, I find it really, the older I get, the harder it is to do it. And the last time when I was there back this earlier this year, my first scene was with gorgeous Dr. Carl.
Oh, Dr. Carl.
Alan
yes,
Alan
Dr. Carl. Alan Fletcher.
I'd been learning. I was really good. I was learning and learning and learning all my lines. And, you know, I was like, yep, got them in, got them tucked away. That's nothing I have to worry about. And so I land on set for my first scene. And Alan's looking at it and he went, you know what, Elise, I think Olivia should say blah, 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 blah. And then maybe put that line there and then go blah, blah, blah. And I looked at him and I went, Alan, I said, you are kidding me. I said, don't do that to me now. I said, you've got no idea what went into learning all these lines. I'm not match fit yet. I don't think I can throw them all around like that, but I'll give it a go.
I love it. And he's been doing it so consistently for so long.
Exactly.
That he's, so for long. Him, you know, actually I read that, you know, even, you know, people think, oh, his neighbour's still running. And the reality is that I actually read that Alan Fletcher's been asked by the UK government to basically be part of a community advertisement to the whole of the UK about, you know, coronavirus precautions and wearing masks and because right. his Amen. Power and his, yeah, but it's amazing. They're getting an Australian soap star to do that community service because the power of Neighbours in the UK is so massive. Yeah. It's so
and
insane.
We actually really make it here for the UK more than anything. That's why I think it's still going. It's for the UK market. No, that's extraordinary. I mean, and, you know, makes sense, doesn't it? Because we're Australian. I mean, we're an advantage that we're an island so far away from anybody else. But that's a good thing. That's a really good thing.
Well, it's good to hear that you've got some great work coming up and that your talents are being rewarded as they should be and you're being treated with the great honour of coming back into the show. And I love that because I feel it's really important that we do honour the talent that we have in this country. What are your hopes finally for the future of the creative arts? You know, can it survive? Do you think we can morph? Can we adapt?
It's sad. It's so sad. That's the part that breaks my heart when I think of, I mean, lots of things break my heart, but just not only, you know, the creatives in front of the camera or on stage and everything, is all these wonderful creative technicians and people behind, you know, like they're all home without jobs and not doing what they love to do. And we will get through this. We will eventually, and I don't know when. I think more and more people are probably looking at this kind of medium of entertainment. It's not the same, we know, is it?
We're going to
a theatre or
hopefully
going to
we'll go
gig.
To theatres too. Hopefully we go back to gigs.
Yeah. Look, I think really we will, but I don't think we will be doing it for a long time the way we used to do it. I think we will all be administering protocols that will maybe be smaller audiences and, you know, everybody's registered, everybody's masked, everybody's, you know, I think that will become our norm. Hopefully we can get back into the swing of things because I already know like productions like Neighbours, in fact, have a very, very strict protocol for the filming there and all the departments are isolated. So art department, wardrobe department, none of them relate to each other. They're all in their own separate areas.
I was wondering that actually. I mean, you certainly can't act with a mask on. I mean, that's...
Well, no, you can't, but they have very strict guidelines as to, yeah. you know, when you are acting, masks down, but then I think, you know, in between, masks back on and, you know, a separate, you know, keeping distance as much as possible. But, look, I am an optimist, Deb. I always will be, always yeah. have been, but it's all different. And we will...
We will survive and thrive.
We will find a way. Yeah. You will find a way.
And so, Elise, listen, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the What I've Learned podcast. As always, you're just an absolute treat to talk to, and always with that beautiful sunny smile and giggle.
And
I look forward to seeing what you create next.
Thank you so much. I love talking to you as well. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you've learned as much as I have. The show will be coming to you free every month, and a subscription is the best way to ensure you get each episode downloaded straight into your pocket. For more stories or for an opportunity to tell your own, head to my website, mindfilmandpublishing.com. In the meantime, stay curious, kind, and connected. With love, Deb.